ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमग्नानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशाम् एष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः। Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the sixth canto, chapter 14. We are on text number 55 today. Right? Nahi Kramashched? Okay. And this is entitled King Chitraketu's Lamentation. We are listening to the queen who has just lost her only son after many years of not having a son. And she's blaming Providence for her problems, as we do in material existence. Interesting. There are many things we can actually learn from this whole passage, really. One of them is that success breeds envy. And we all watch what you pray for. We all strive for success in so many ways, but once you have it, then you have to fend off all these envious people who want what you have. Not what you are, but what you have. And another thing is that happiness and the mode of passion, what do we learn from chapter 14 of Bhagavad Gita? Rajasas tu phalam dukham. The fruit of rajaguna, passionate happiness, is that you will suffer. So we've seen here the king's happiness has turned to pain now. His son was named like that, Harshashoka. And another thing is that no one really knows the outcome, but one thing we do know is that fate always wins. Only fate can win. We don't know how things are going to turn out in the future. It was interesting, back in text number 41, also we see that the happiness in the material world is the inverse of happiness in the spiritual world, because in text 41, these queens who were envious, they were condemning their position as maidservants. Even maidservants who are constantly engaged in rendering service to the husband are honored by the husbands, and thus they have nothing for which to lament. Our position, however, is that we are maidservants of the maidservant. Therefore, we are most unfortunate. Isn't it interesting how faith twists our intelligence? The very thing which is higher in the spiritual realm is the lower thing in this material realm, and vice versa. So we've seen the situation here with these barren queens who are just burning with envy. Nunam pramatta kurute vikarma. When we are cemented into the bodily concept of life like that, we become mad, and we have to commit sinful activities, as we've seen here. They've just killed this poor child. Now, it's complicated, because back in text 46, the dhatri, or the nurse who happened to find the child dead there, anybody remember what she said? Hatasmi. What does it mean? I'm killed. Why does she say I'm killed? What happens? You find yourself alone in a room with a dead body and all these envious people around you. Who are they going to blame? So she was undone, at least in that sense. Or she was grieving. Of course, the whole world is full of unscrupulous cheaters. Therefore, we have no dearth here of grieving killers. All the other queens were also grieving very piteously, even those who were the ones who killed the child. But anyway, and then finally yesterday she said, "Alas, O Providence, O Creator, you are certainly inexperienced in creation, for during the lifetime of the Father you have caused the death of his Son, thus acting in opposition to your creative laws. If you're determined to contradict these laws, you are certainly the enemy of the living entities and are never merciful." So today's verse. Nahi kramaschet ihamrityu janmanoho sharirinam astu tad atma karnamabhihi yasneha pasho nijasarga vriddhaye svayam kritaste tamimam vrivishtati. Nahi kramaschet ihan janma mrityu janmayoho sharirinam astu tad atma karnamabhihi yasneha pasho nijasarga vriddhaye svayam kritaste tamimam vivrishyasi. Nahi kramaschet iha mrityu janmanoho sharirinam astu tad atma karnamabhihi yasneha pasho nijasarga vriddhaye svayam kritaste tamimam vivrishyasi. Nahi kramaschet iha janma mrityo sharirinam astu tadatma karmabhihi yasneha pasho nijasarga vriddhaye svayam kritaste tamimam vrishyasi. Nahi kramaschet iha mrityu janmanoho sharirinam astu tad atma karnamabhihi yasneha pasho svayam kritaste tamimam vrishyasi. Nahi kramaschet iha mrityu janmanoho sharirinam astu tad atma karnamabhihi ladies. Nahi kramaschet iha mrityu janmanoho sharirinam astu tad atma karnamabhihi yasneha pasho nijasarga vriddhaye svayam kritaste tam imam vivrishyasi. Nahi kramaschet iha mrityu janmano sharirinam astu tad atma karnamabhihi yasneha pasho nijasarga vriddhaye svayam kritaste tamimam vrishyasi. Na, not, he, indeed. Kramaha, chronological order. Chet, if, iha, in this material world, mrityu, of death, janmanoho, and of birth, sharirinam, of the conditioned souls who have accepted material bodies, astu, Let it be. Tat, that. Atma karmabhihi, by the results of one's karma, fruit of activities. Yaha, that which, sneha pashaha, the bondage of affection. Nijasarga, your own creation. Vridhaye, to increase. Swayam, personally. Krataha, made. Te, by you. Tam, that. Imam, this. Vivrishchasi, you are cutting. Translation, my lord, you may say that there is no law that a father must die in the lifetime of his son, and that a son must be born in the lifetime of his father, since everyone lives and dies according to his own fruitive activity. However, if fruitive activity is so strong that birth and death depend upon it, there is no need of a controller or God. Again, if you say that a controller is needed because the material energy does not have the power to act, one may answer that if the bonds of affection you have created are disturbed by fruit of action, no one will raise children with affection. Instead, everyone will cruelly neglect his children. Since you have cut the bonds of affection that compel a parent to raise his child, you appear inexperienced and unintelligent. Now please repeat, my lord, you may say that there is no law that a father must die in the lifetime of his son, and that a son must be born in the lifetime of his father. Since everyone lives and dies according to his own fruit of activity. However, if fruit of activity is so strong that birth and death depend upon it, there's no need of a controller or God. Again, if you say that a controller is needed because the material energy does not have the power to act, one may answer that if the bonds of affection you have created are disturbed by fruitive action, no one will raise children with affection. Instead, everyone will cruelly neglect his children. Since you have cut the bonds of affection that compel a parent to raise his child, you appear inexperienced and unintelligent. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, karmani nirdahati kintucha bhakti bhajam, one who has taken to Krishna consciousness, devotional service, is not affected by the results of karma. In this verse, karma has been stressed on the basis of karma mimamsa philosophy, which says that one must act according to his karma and that a supreme controller must give the results of karma. The subtle laws of karma, which are controlled by the Supreme, cannot be understood by ordinary conditioned souls. Therefore, Krishna says that one who can understand him and how he is acting, controlling everything by subtle laws, immediately becomes freed by his grace. That is the statement of Brahma Samhita, karmani nirdahati kintucha bhakti bhajam. One should take to devotional service without reservations and surrender everything to the supreme will of the Lord. That will make one happy in this life and the next. Om Agnana Timirantasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lankayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Sri Gurum Dinataranam Nahi Akramashched Iha Mrityu Janmanoho Shariram Astu Tadatma Karma Bhi. If there's no order in this world of birth and death among these people who have accepted material bodies, then everything has to be carried out by dint of one's karma. This is called karma mimamsa philosophy or purva mimamsa philosophy, and it really does not essentially require God, because the postulation there is that everything is happening on the basis of this divine power called ritu. Order or krama, the word is used here. Krama means logical sequence or order, some rhyme or reason. Sometimes we don't see rhyme or reason in our lives or in the lives of other people in this world. And the first two lines of today's verse, they show how some processed this thousands and thousands of years ago, how some people accommodated this experience and rationalized or justified or explained it. They came up with this philosophy that everything is just basically karma. After all, if you think about it, it really is practically so in terms of our experience, and certainly within the framework of the mental platform on which this statement is made by the Queen, that's totally valid. That's something to consider, that within the domain of whatever faith we have cultivated, whatever we think is valid, even if we're saying something atheistic. So to empathize with someone who is not in Krishna consciousness is not such an easy thing, but it is a very valuable attainment, actually. But anyway, here we're talking about Atma Karma Bhi. Now, Srila Prabhupada has taken the word tad here in line 2. Tad means that. It's an impersonal neuter pronoun. In some commentaries, it's instead interpreted as tada, because according to what they call euphonic combination or sandhi rules in Sanskrit, the way certain words join together, they merge. So here we see tadatma karma bhi. It's become, in effect, one word because the long A plus another long A, that stays long A. You can merge them. So either you can read it as tad or you can read it as tada. Remember, this is a conditional clause. Chit means if. So if, and then tada means in that case. So it works like that. So if there's no order, and everything is just coming about by karma, then really what's the point of God here? On the other hand, if there is a God, then what kind of a God is it who creates these bonds of affection and then cuts them to pieces? This is the question. Yasneha pasho nijasarga vridhaye swayamkritaste tam imam vrishyasi. You cut this creation of your own doing to pieces. Even though you are the one who has created the bonds of affection, the ropes of affection, it's used here, in order to increase your creation, sargavriddhaye. Now, if we remember way back in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam in Canto 2, Chapter 10, Text Number 4, the purposes of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the topics within the Srimad Bhagavatam were outlined in those verses. So he says, manvantarani saddharma utayaha karma vasanaha. What does that mean? Sthitir vaikunta vijaya poshanam tad anugraha manvantarani saddharma utayaha karma vasana. What is the word uti? It's not very often used word. It means impetus or incentive, maybe we can say. Enjoyment. Enjoyment which is given as a bonus, so to speak, the mercy from the Lord. Sense gratification in this mature world. The impetus for fruit of activity is the reward, the phala, the fruit. So karmavasana, our minds are colored with these things, with these dreams and anticipations of enjoying so many things in this material world. But remember, we said in the beginning, nobody knows how this plot actually ends up. So many twists and turns our life takes, nobody can say how it's going to turn out. Therefore, be careful not to judge. We don't even know when the end has been reached yet. Harshashoka, he had a son named Harshashoka. He thought that was the fruit of a long journey. It was actually just the beginning of an even harder time for him, right? We don't know what kind of tests await us, say, 10 years down the road. So be very careful about how we judge others as well. Karma vasana, our minds are full of these dreams and anticipations to enjoy in this material world, and our impetus for fruitive activity in this world is uti, the pleasurable result that we get from it. Now the problem is the problem is being stated here by the queen. This system, if you will, krama, it's designed to fail. It doesn't work. It has never worked. It will never work. It does not work at present. And we have to figure out how to deal with that fact. It's an ordered chaos, we might say, or so it seems, for those who are looking at it from the mental platform, as the queen is doing right now. So for the abhakta, for the non-devotee, what's he going to do about this? He has a choice. He can either dispense with karma or dharma altogether, or he can dispense with the notion of love. And we see that people do this. People either become, nowadays, by and large, most people have simply become vikarnamis. That is to say, they don't have any regard for what's shastrically enjoined behavior, what's prohibited and what's prescribed in the religious scriptures of the world. They have very little concern for that. They're so confused about all the complexities of life that they just don't want to bother with it. And so they become papis, they become vikarnamis, and they entangle themselves even further. Those are the, how should we say, those are the curdled karmis. When a karmi becomes curdled, he turns into a vikarmi. He's lost faith in the system. He thinks there is no system, which is what she's saying here. Nahi kramaschet, marityujanmano, is there even a system here in this chaos? Why is it that if we have these bonds of affection, that they're going to be slashed like this? It's not normal course of activities for one's son or daughter to die before one. This is the ideal, at least. This is our karmavasana. This is the hope or the anticipation we all enter into family life with. So they have this choice. And some of them, you see, they become nirvishesha shunyavadis. They become Buddhists. That's a very big thing in the modern world, isn't it? Because we're so burnt out with the pungence of the modern frenetic, passionate, exploitive lifestyle that we just want some peace. We just seek some repose from all the madness, isn't it? And because we're not pious enough, because we're curdled karmis, we've become vikarmis, therefore we can't really recognize the authority of the Lord, and therefore it's also very convenient. Anatman. This is the idea, in Buddhism in particular. There's no soul, there's no God, there's no authority. The authority is a problem also, isn't it, if you're envious? So we see that people are driven to make these choices. And here implicitly, at least, the queen is kind of going in that direction. Of course, she's a little more pious. She at least understands that there is a soul, that there's karma, that there's reincarnation, all these things. Nowadays, people are so sunk in tamoguna, ignorance. They don't even recognize these categories, these padarthas. So, tamastu phalam, tamastu agnanajam phalam. The fruit of the mode of ignorance is simply ignorance and suffering. So, in the example of King Chitraketu and his associates, they have had their passion frustrated, and now they're suffering, and they're bewildered about what to do, and they're not sure there's even a system in place here. But if there is one, and if there is a God who has created that system, then he's responsible for slashing this Sneha Pasha. Now, Pasha, what does the word Pasha mean? Rope. We're bound about the neck by affection for our loved ones in this material world, and yet they all die. Or we die. You can't keep it. Even if you can tolerate the fact that there's birth, death, old age, and disease, even if you can tolerate that there are miseries produced of your own body and mind, miseries produced of others' bodies and minds, or miseries that come as a result of karma or fate, even if you can tolerate all those seven things, then you can't do so forever. So either way, you're going to lose it. Tamal Krishna Goswami used to summarize it nicely. You can either get what you want and you lose it, or you never get what you want because you didn't deserve it, or you get what you want and it's not everything that it's cracked up to be. So either way, frustration is the only problem, is the only result here in this material world. Grief, such as we see here in Chitraketu, intense grief. If you haven't had it yet, just stick around. You will. Guaranteed. You will grieve like this if you stay in this material world. It's just a matter of time. You see? So it's an ugly situation, and somebody has to process it. Is there even an order here? Is there even a God in charge? She seems to be going in the direction of Karma Mimamsa and kind of implying that there is no God. But if there is a God, commentators tell us, Murka Eva Iti Bhava, he's a fool. Because he created this system that just doesn't work. A smart person will recognize that it can't work. Even Varnashram Dharma, the much touted system that Srila Prabhupada called the remaining 50% of his mission, can never work. It's not even intended to work. Ultimately, it's still intended to fail. But it works better than anything else, and at least spiritually it works for whom? For us. It works for us, because if we live that way, then we are at least elevated such that we get our intelligence purified and we don't have to lament and criticize in the way that this queen is doing here in this verse. So, as is often the case, Srila Prabhupada's translation here is rather lengthy. You look at the verse of four lines and wonder how does he fit all that English into those four Sanskrit lines. In fact, Srila Prabhupada has incorporated many elements of the Acharya's commentaries within this translation as well. And one of them is here. If there's a God who's necessary to control this order that creates so much suffering for all of us, then as soon as we are disturbed by the natural result of fruitive activities, we have a problem performing our dharma, isn't it? Who's going to endeavor to work hard in order to fulfill his varnashram or dharmic responsibilities if it's understood that the whole thing is for naught? Therefore, utaya karma vasana, it doesn't really work. If you remain on the mental platform, and your impetus for fruitive activity in this world, that is to say pious activity, real fruitive activity, not sinful activity. Karma equals dharma. Bookmark that. If we remain in this world on the mundane level, performing dharma on the mental platform, then we're going to have a problem. We're going to run into a brick wall sooner or later because it's going to backfire on us. And we're going to become frustrated, or we're going to have to question, why should I work so hard? Because dharma is work, make no mistake about it. If you want to be virtuous in the world, in this world, you have to pay money. You have to pay for it. It costs. It's expensive. The default to do the cheap thing is to just go with the flow. Where does the flow go? Always down. Like water. It doesn't flow naturally upward. The modes of material nature, especially in this Kali Yuga, they will impel us towards Rajas and Tamas. And we've been discussing the results of those two modes. So, these are some things we can say about this on the basis of the commentaries, but let's look at what Prabhupada has said about this. because he kind of changes gears as compared to the previous commentators. First thing he quotes, Karnamani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam, from the Brahma Samhita. What does that mean? That means that Govinda will take your karmic reactions and burn them up, if he wants to. Now, how do you tell when he wants to do that and when he doesn't want to do that? You can't. You don't know. Therefore, again, either in the material world or in the spiritual world, we have to be careful not to judge too harshly. We just don't know what he's doing. And in this sense, nahi kramaschet, there actually is no order. Even though we talk about karma and everything is very hierarchical and highly structured, the whole Bhagavatam, the whole at least 9 cantos are going through the tremendous, sophisticated structure of the cosmic manifestation and the order behind it. And at the same time, ultimately, it's all canceled out by the Lord's whim, the Lord's desire. If he wants, then you may have been fated to enjoy or suffer in a certain way karmically, but if he wants, he can nullify the whole thing. So, when we take to Krishna consciousness, if we have good karma, I'm a very sattvic, say I'm born as a Banerjee or a Trivedi or an Iyengar or whatever, a high Brahmin family in the mode of goodness, but you can lose that. You can lose it. Nothing is guaranteed. There's no security in this material world. So the only thing that's really secure is to act on under Krishna's care. Take shelter of Krishna and act on the faith that he will take care of me. Anybody know what Bhaktivinoda calls this? Avashya Rakhive Krishna. Krishna will certainly take care of me. This is an aspect of what we call Sharanagati, or surrender to the Lord. So Prabhupada is saying this, first of all, he's starting out from the point of devotional service. It's assumed that one is a devotee and therefore this verse is relevant. Prabhupada also notes there are 7 sentences in this purport. In his second sentence, he observes that this woman is coming from, this queen is coming from the platform of Karma Mimamsa, it seems. Now, another thing he says is that the subtle laws of karma, which are controlled by the Supreme, cannot be understood by ordinary conditioned souls, period. That's in the material world, and as we've already discussed, in the spiritual world, when we're talking about Krishna's unfettered desire, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur calls him the transcendental autocrat, or sometimes the transcendental despot, even. He can do anything he wants. So nobody can understand him either. So either you're in the material world or in the spiritual world, you don't know what's going on, for sure, except through faith. Therefore, Shraddhamayo Ayam Purusha. This living entity, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he's made out of faith. It's all he is. Then Prabhupada says, one who can understand Krishna by his grace immediately becomes freed by his grace. Grace is the vehicle in both cases. And then finally, the real purport is the last sentence. One should take to devotional service without reservations and surrender everything to the supreme will of the Lord. That will make one happy in this life and the next. The key word here is without reservations. Without reservations. One should surrender everything unto Krishna and take shelter of his supreme will. This queen here of Maharaj Chitraketu, I guess it's Kritadyuti, she is expressing her reservations. At least she knows what those reservations are. When you're put into a situation so intense as she's experiencing right now, I mean, think of the samskars involved here. Think about what's on the minds of those queens who killed the baby, when they're all grieving and beating their breasts and crying. Heavy karma. This is karma vasana. Anyway, she's she's experiencing something pretty intense. When you're in that condition, then it's very easy to express what your reservations are. In many cases, however, when everything is going great and we're intoxicated, inebriated by Maya, we don't even know what our reservations are. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada has been supremely merciful to us in his Bhagavad Gita purport, chapter 4, text number 10, and he's outlined them for us as per Krishna's own statement in that verse. Anybody know it? Vitaraga payakrodha. What's the rest of it? Vitaraga bhaya krodha. There are three things that keep us, three reservations that we all have. Look at yourself carefully. This is what the early morning hours are meant for. And consider, am I attached? That's called raga. To sense gratification or to the status quo, creature comforts or whatever, I'm attached to something, most likely. Otherwise, I wouldn't have this body. All right? And then what's the second thing? Bhaya. Am I afraid? Because as soon as you become attached, we've already discussed, you're going to lose that attachment. Naturally, fear has to accompany that. Right? And then, you know, as we said already, things become so complicated sometimes in life. Look at all the characters in this, what shall we call it, drama. They're all pretty much in anxiety about these complexities. And because of this and because of the difficulties of trying to figure it all out, as she's saying here, nahi kramascheyaha, sometimes people just become angry. And Prabhupada says the angry people are those who just philosophically speculate and conclude there is no God, there's no reason or rhyme to it. These are our existentialist friends. They're intelligent. This is the natural conclusion of an intelligent person who does not have piety in this world, that there's no God in control, there's no order, there's no rhyme or reason, it's just madness. It's not surprising that people say these things, the existentialists in particular. So anyway, these are the three things that keep us from surrendering to Krishna. These are the three reservations, and if we can give up these reservations and take shelter of Krishna in faith, then we can transcend all the terrible results of passion and ignorance that we're seeing in these verses here. I'll stop there, but just wanted to mention that today is Bahulashtami, Snandan, and it's the appearance day of Sri Radha Kund. Srimati Radharani Ki! On this day in Vrindavan, so many people, they're going to Radha Kund and they take their bath there. Of course, nowadays, I don't know, somehow or other, the rumor has got out that if you go to Radha Kund and bathe on Bahulashtami, then you'll get a son if you're sonless. So maybe it's apropos for today's class as well to mention that. But it's kind of a nuisance because people mainly come from Delhi and Gwalior and other places, and they bring like big, you know, pumpkins and they float them, and the Radha Kund fills up with vegetables and, you know, they leave their trash there, and they, you know, that's just, anyway. But many devotees also, they're chanting prayers at midnight. They go and take baths, and they're doing kirtan, and they're praying to Srimati Radharani, because if anybody even once takes baths in Radha Kund, that person will get pure love of Godhead, just like Srimati Radharani's love. That's quite a benediction we have from the Shastras. Don't have time to read very much about it, but you can see in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 36, text number 16, the story of how Radha Kund came into, how she appeared. It was a very interesting story. It's given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila, chapter 18, beginning with text 13, we hear about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who discovered Radha Kund, as it were, in the 16th century. It was kind of lupta, disappeared. And he was able to understand through his omniscience where it was. Also, and probably most important for most of us, in the end of Nectar of Instruction by Srila Prabhupada, the last three verses, they give extensive information about the exalted spiritual position of Sri Radha Kund. And nice purports are given there by Srila Prabhupada in the previous acharyas. I'll just read those three verses before we end, just for auspiciousness. He says, the holy place known as Mathura is spiritually superior to Vaikuntha, the transcendental world, because the Lord appeared there. Superior to Mathurapuri is the transcendental forest of Vrindavan because of Krishna's Ras Lila pastimes. And superior to the forest of Vrindavan is Govardhan Hill, for it was raised by the divine hand of Sri Krishna and was the site of his various loving pastimes. And above all, the super excellent Sri Radha Kund stands supreme, for it is overflooded with the ambrosial nectarian prema of the Lord of Gokula Sri Krishna. Where then is that intelligent person who is unwilling to serve this divine Radha Kund, which is situated at the foot of Govardhan Hill? In the Shastra, it is said that of all types of fruitive workers, he who is advanced in knowledge of the higher values of life is favored by the Supreme Lord Hari. Out of many such people who are advanced in knowledge, or jnanis, one who is practically liberated by virtue of his knowledge may take to devotional service. He is superior to the others. However, one who has actually attained prem, pure love for Krishna, is superior to him. The gopis are exalted above all the advanced devotees because they are always totally dependent upon Sri Krishna, the transcendental cowherd boy. Among the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the most dear to Krishna. Her kunda, or lake, is as profoundly dear to Lord Krishna as this most beloved of the gopis. Who then will not reside at Radha Kund and in a spiritual body surcharged with ecstatic devotional feelings of Prakrita Bhava render loving service to the divine couple Sri Sri Radha Govinda, who perform their Ashtakali Alila, their eternal eightfold daily pastimes? Indeed, those who execute devotional service on the banks of Radha Kund are the most fortunate people in the universe. And finally, of the many objects of favored delight and of all the lovable damsels of Rajabhumi, Srimati Radharani is certainly the most treasured object of Sri Krishna's love. And in every respect, her divine kund, as described by great sages as similarly dear to him, undoubtedly Radha Kund is very rarely attained, even by the great devotees. Therefore, it is even more difficult for ordinary devotees to attain. If one simply bathes once within those holy waters, one's pure love of Krishna is fully aroused. And we find many very nice things Srila Prabhupada states here in his purport, but in the interest of saving time, I will let you read those on your own. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.